Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome back to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and once again, I'm joined by my co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome, Brenton.
G'day, Robert. Good to be back.
So we're back again, and the ratings have been good so far, so you've been signed up for a longer contract, so that should make you feel happy.
Oh, it's good. It's good to think that the community accepts me, Robert.
Well, maybe not accept. You've just got to, keep at it, I suppose. So I think, obviously, there was a lot of positive feedback from the previous episode on the data breach legislation and some of the security and compliance offerings around Office 365 and to an extent Azure. We're seeing a greater emphasis being placed on this, no doubt, and that's one of the key features of the Microsoft 365 product, which we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into after we get through some news there. So it's good to see that I think people are beginning to pay a bit more attention to the security side of IT. It's something I think that we've become so dependent on, and it needs a lot more focus than we have, or that people have put it on in the past. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Cool. All right. Well, why don't I do some news as well while we're here, and then we can get into having a bit of discussion around the Microsoft 365 environment. So for those of you who may not be aware, we are now at or just past the one-year anniversary of Microsoft Teams. So about 12 months ago, Microsoft released what many seem to call its Slack competitor or its Slack killer. I don't really see it as that. I think it certainly incorporates a lot of the Slack abilities from that product, but it encompasses a whole lot more. So it basically is a skin or a single pane of glass across things like Exchange, messaging service, SharePoint, Planner, and a whole range of other things. So again, one of the other things Microsoft did recently is open up the external access, so we can now have users with just a Microsoft account joining into a Microsoft Teams. So you can have an Azure AD account or a Microsoft account to join as an external user into Teams. There's lots and lots of new features that Microsoft have on their roadmap for the product, which is really exciting, and I think that we certainly will see these in the very near future. So are you seeing much usage out there of Teams as yet, Brenton?
Well, it was interesting. I had a really good conversation with a customer last week, and they were saying, oh, we're looking at Basecamp. I said, oh, yeah, we use Basecamp up in our co-working space. It works really well. You know, it does everything we need it to do. But have you looked at the offerings from Microsoft? So they're Google Apps customers, and very soon they'll be getting a proposal in front of them to take them off Google Apps and put them into Office 365, mainly around security concerns and Azure AD integration with Windows 10 and stuff. I just can't deal with Google. Plus, I don't know how any of it works, so I can't really support them properly. I'm not saying it's a bad product. I'm just saying I need them in Microsoft, and it's time for them to go. Someone's going, you know, look at what you can do with Microsoft. If you want to do a HD video call, which they need to do over multiple sites, good luck doing that in Basecamp. Good luck doing a few other things, real-time chat. Good luck doing that. None of that's in Basecamp. And I said, and the other thing you got to think about, not just for what you need now, but what you need in the future, is, you know, how are you going to manage all of this stuff? As soon as you keep adding SaaS app, all of a sudden you got 20, 30 SaaS apps, and it's too hard to manage. So let's have a think about, can we get this product here, Teams, that has billions of dollars of, you know, development going into it, if you count SharePoint, everything else that they're doing in the cloud, that all goes into it, or do you want to use Basecamp, a niche provider on the internet? Great for a small, you know, team just doing basic stuff, like what we do in the hub, upload a financial statement, have a look at the financial statement, have a discussion about it. Or are you looking for something that's going to grow with your business, you know? So they're not entirely on board with it yet because they don't use any of the other Office 365 apps, so they don't get the value proposition of it. But I said, look, it'll integrate with your Dropbox, and it'll integrate with whatever. So that's the sort of conversation I think we've got to start having with our customers is you're probably not going to get a customer from nowhere to Teams. You're probably going to have to get them using something like a Planner or a SharePoint or something first, and then go, hey, look, this ties it all together.
Yeah, so again, some of the highlights of Teams, which we'll put a link to in the show notes as usual. So Microsoft is saying that it's got over 200,000 organizations in 181 markets, 39 languages using Teams. Some of those organizations include NASCAR, include General Motors, Technicolor, all sorts of people using it. Some of the things they're talking about bringing to it, which I think are very interesting, obviously they want to do the one-click cloud recording, so you can have a meeting, push a button, and then you can do like a Skype meeting that's recorded. You've also got the ability soon to do inline message translation where we've got different languages. We've also got, this is a pretty cool option, I think, is the ability to blur the background in a video. So again, if you're doing a meeting and you've got some distractions in your behind you, like you're working out of your home office or kitchen or somewhere else, you can elect to blur the background in the video, which I think would be very, very handy. We've also got a proximity detection, which allows you to work out what's available to have meeting rooms that are nearby. And again, lots and lots of other features in there. So again, look out for more improvements from Teams as it comes along, and it's certainly come a long way in the 12 months that it has been available. Now, another thing that Microsoft has done, probably not so much Office 365, but it has released a new look for its Outlook.com, so its consumer version of Exchange, I suppose. So again, it's got a new look for its mail, and strangely enough, it looks very much like Office 365. But it does have some nice integrations with Skype, consumer Skype, and a number of other things like Cortana as well. So I think we're beginning to see that both of the products, Exchange Online and also Outlook.com, will start sharing a lot of common features, and this is going to bring the best experience. But the big differentiator is always going to be the compliance and the security options that are Exchange Online. So again, I think that's why businesses will always choose that. It's great to have a free option as a lead into the market, but remember that the compliance and security that we've been talking about recently is one of the major reasons that people are using things like Office 365 and Exchange Online. We just can't seem to get rid of that email, can we, Brenton?
I don't think we'll ever get rid of email. It's so ubiquitous. And, you know, when I get up and talk about the death of email and all of that sort of stuff, I actually say, you know, email is a great product. It's a great replacement to written letters. If you're using it for instant chat, if you're using it for document sharing, if you're using it as a backup drive, if you're storing corporate information in it, that's not what it was designed to do. It's there to replace the letter. It came around when Gough Whitlam was still in office as Prime Minister. You know, this is not how you run a business these days, although you can do it. We really don't see good results when you do. And then I'll go through all of those results and people start to go, yeah, I get that 4 hours a day in email and don't get anything done and blah, 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 but I have no other option. And it chimes in Robert Crane. We've got Microsoft Teams to put it all together now. So yeah, I don't think the excuse of, oh, it won't work for our organization is going to work anymore. It's going to work better than email almost always every time.
Yeah, I think, again, like you said, the dial tone's there with email. It's what will be common across everybody. I think there's a large move to messaging systems for various reasons. But I think that, like I said, email will be there. But I think the volumes will obviously go down. One of the other things I would say that is a differentiator and a nice segue into the next news item is the security eye. So most of the security, most of the bad stuff is delivered via email today because it allows external people to send typically attachments, and that's where a lot of people are getting whacked by things like CryptoLock and phishing attacks. Now, what Microsoft is also doing along that is implementing improved services in the Advanced Threat Protection. So the Advanced Threat Protection is a service that is available in the E5 by default, but you can also add it on for roughly about $3 in Australia to any SKU. Now, I've added it on to my personal SKUs, and again, what it provides me is firstly the ability to open suspect attachments in a sandbox. So Microsoft will open the suspect attachment, see if it changes the registry or if it starts deleting files or changing files. I've also got the ability with Advanced Threat Protection to handle safe links. So again, if there is a link which is suspect, it will send me through a proxy and warn me about that, as well as doing a number of other options. So I think that there's a lot of benefit in looking at the Advanced Threat Protection. Microsoft are doing a lot of work around that. Some of the more advanced plans with the Office 365 Threat Protection, which is the next level up, basically allows you to craft your own, attacks that you can simulate and send to staff to see how they react to these and see whether they're giving up their credentials. Something else Microsoft has also added is an add-in for Outlook that allows you to report a message. So you can report a message directly to Microsoft from Outlook now that is junk, phishing, or whatever. So I'm using that quite regularly to try and obviously provide feedback to Microsoft. So in general, I think that Microsoft is spending a lot of time and effort and enhancing its security products, especially Advanced Threat Protection. Now, one of the other interesting stats I saw about Advanced Threat Protection is that Microsoft claims that it is protecting more mailboxes with that product than every other vendor combined times three. So basically what it's saying is the size of Office 365 with Advanced Threat Protection on their mailboxes is greater than every other provider, their protection on all the other mailboxes combined times three. So that's pretty impressive when you look at it, isn't it?
Definitely is. I was talking to one of the guys at Microsoft and he was saying it's right up there with Proofpoint. He said that still all our customers go out and buy Proofpoint, but if you configure this up properly, this is on par, if not better than Proofpoint. So why is everyone out there putting on mailing filtering? And look, we've talked about this in the past, Robert, around MSPs that run around and put all these products over the top of Office 365 because it said, oh, it won't do this, it won't do that. And it's like, well, how much time do you spend configuring it up to the customer's requirements? Because the thing is very powerful, but if you're just going to use it out of the box, then what, and you have issues with it and you go, oh, okay, well, it must be the product. You got to take a little bit of responsibility there, don't you?
Well, I think the thing is I think a lot of people in our space have been very, the familiar thing was you buy a product like Small Business Server or something from Microsoft. It typically didn't have AV, it didn't have filtering, or it had, very basic concepts. So now you would then have to go out and you would have to add a third party service. I think that in the world of the cloud and again, in the world effectively of enterprise services, Microsoft is making these available. And again, it's just a matter of you get what you pay for. So I think, as you said, that there's a lot that you can do by default out of the box. So there are things like DKIM, DMARC, your SPF records, all of those can be tightened up. They can all be done with something like PowerShell so you can automate it. And then if you add on, these features like Advanced Threat Protection for about $3 a license or things like Azure AD Premium, that's going to give you even more security. So we're seeing some of these options typically outside of Office 365, like Azure AD Premium and whatnot, rights management and so on, being bundled into the Microsoft 365 product, which we'll talk about shortly. So I don't think the Microsoft product is short on security. I don't think the default product is short on security. I think that a lot of it, as you said, needs to fall back on people to be configured correctly because it's obviously configured for the average user. There's a lot that can be done to lock it down. And if you set up the automation processes like PowerShell to do that, then it makes it very, very straightforward. And I think it, again, lifts the security quite dramatically. So again, you're right. There is a huge amount that can be done with each of the generic products. And there's probably a huge amount that people should be doing to improve it out of the box. The great thing is once they've done it once, they can script it and then repeat it on a regular basis. So that's a very straightforward way to approach it. Now, the other thing I'll let you know about is there's a link here for the Azure AD Connect version release history. So Azure AD Connect is the software that allows you to synchronize your on-premises users and passwords, hash them up, send the hash off via secure synchronization up to Office 365 so they match what's in the cloud and on-prem. It's very, very important to make sure that you're obviously running on the latest version of this Azure AD Connect so you're able to see what the current version is. So the most recent version we have at the moment is 1.1.750. So make sure that you have that. And again, it's got all the release notes for the differences in between those items. So anything else in the Office 365 space grab you that since our last podcast, Brenton?
Not particularly. I saw Dynamics is getting its own dashboard. Skype for Business is getting its own admin center. Dynamics is getting its own admin center, which is going to help bring together Power BI. I think as time goes on and we see more Dynamics adoption, it's probably going to happen more and more in mid-market.
I've heard that Microsoft's about to push out to general availability worldwide its Dynamics accounting product. So it's about to push that out. And the interesting thing I saw was that it's going to be worldwide. It's just going to be US and Canada as it typically is. So again, what it's going to give people is this integration with accounts, with purchases, all invoicing, all that sort of stuff rolled in. So it'll be very interesting seeing when that hits the market and how well that's adopted. I personally think it certainly will be well adopted because, again, that one login, that one identity to rule them all.
Yeah, and I think... I think so. I think there's going to be some issues around antitrust coming up again as Microsoft bundles more and more of these products in to these SKUs. Europe's particularly sensitive to it. So I think a lot of US, Canada releases are because of that. They don't particularly want to trigger an antitrust thing because, you know, as we're getting into it and we're going to start talking about Microsoft 365, it's filling a lot of the gaps. And when I was talking to Microsoft up at the summit, they were saying, yeah, we're going to enterprise now and saying, you've got 125 security vendors. It's a nightmare. We get it. No one can maintain 120 relationships. We're going to help you get that down to about 40. And we want to be one of those big security vendors. So they still recognize there's a lot of space that other vendors come in and do better or that customers need because of enterprise. But it is sort of interesting how the convergence of everything going into a few companies will land in the end of the day.
Yeah, so again, lots and lots of news, lots and lots of things happening with Office 365. Again, Teams is the focus, but we're seeing more and more stuff. And as Brenton mentions, more and more gaps are being filled. And I think some of the products are really getting some power features. And that's why you need to dive into them and investigate some of these because they can really solve some major pain points. Now, we've also got some Azure news here. So the update management inventory and change tracking in Azure Automation is now generally available. So again, what we've got in things like virtual machines now is that we have the ability to track updates. We have the ability to do inventory of those machines. We have the ability to look at changes in each individual virtual machine. And then we can roll that all up into the overall Azure monitoring console. So again, one of the big benefits of moving infrastructure into Azure is a lot of these services are being built in. So Azure virtual machines not only allow you to basically run a machine of any power that you wish, but it also allows you to monitor, patch, update, backups now built into it, have a single dashboard to monitor it all, apply security, deploy it using things like Puppet and Chef. So again, we're seeing this move to the cloud with infrastructure quite dramatically, I think, because it just makes sense. It's just so much easier to do, manage, and control. And again, you can deploy the whole thing with software. So again, we'll make sure that the information is in the release notes. Another, I suppose, little update here is that the Azure File Sync Preview. All right, so again, that has been available in Australia in the Australia East region. That is now also available in the Australia Southeast region. So the Azure File Sync allows you basically to set up a service in Azure and connect it to any on-prem servers, and then you put an agent on those servers, and that will synchronize the files from server to server up to Azure SMB file shares and allow people to obviously update, change files, and then for that version to be replicated not only to Azure but also between machines. So if you have a very large amount of data and perhaps you're not ready to go to SharePoint as yet, you're still comfortable with files and folders, or some of your information is still files and folders, this Azure Sync service is really, really powerful and really easy to use, and certainly highly recommended. Now, currently still in preview, but we expect that to come out of that shortly and then provide additional functionality. So again, imagine the NAS or the old file server sitting in the corner. This is going to give you that ability to continue to use that, but then get the security and the backup, I suppose, of your files to other locations and to Azure. So it's a pretty cool tool that Microsoft has made available probably since about September. We have spoken about it before on the podcast, and we probably will do some updates, but you can have a look, dive in and do that. And I have done a how-to video on my YouTube channel to show people. So have you seen the FileSync preview in Azure at all, Brenton?
No, not at the moment, no.
So again, something I'd recommend you have a look at, especially again if you're looking to transition to Office 365, and maybe you don't want to move everything to OneDrive or SharePoint, Team Sites or Teams straight away. That's something to have a look at. And the great thing now is it's now available in the Australia Southeast region, which means it's right near a data center down your way, Brenton. So the data centers in Melbourne now support it as well.
Oh, even nicer. Yeah, it's good to be close.
Makes
to
it even nice. Center, yeah, exactly. Making it nice. Latency is a big thing, so it makes it nice and easy. Now, the storage service in Azure now allows customers to bring their own keys. That's become generally available. So one of the, concerns with Microsoft doing encryption of disks and storage in Azure was they used a Microsoft key to do this. So customers can now bring their own keys into the Azure environment and choose to encrypt their disks and their storage. You can also do this in Office 365 as well. So if you want to, you can bring your own key and you can encrypt your data with that key. Now, the big caveat here is with great power comes great responsibility, because if you lose that certificate or stuff it up, then Microsoft can't rescue you, right? You're purely responsible for your data integrity in that experience. So again, I think it's a handy feature. Do you get many people asking you about or being concerned about Microsoft being able to read their data in the cloud these days?
Nah, look, no one really cares. There's a few people who are very security conscious, but people don't really understand encryption well enough. What I really need to get out to customers and explain to them is whoever owns the encryption key owns the data or can see the data. So, you know, Dropbox is a classic. We sell a lot of Dropbox, but Dropbox holds all the encryption keys. So they go, oh, it's 256-bit encryption, whatever. You know, military-grade encryption. It's based on DES encryption that's never been mathematically broken. It's amazing. It is amazing. Encryption, but whoever has the encryption key can see the data. On the other side of that, if you can hold your own encryption keys and they're long enough and, you know, secure enough, you can be very reasonably secure in the cloud. Like, honestly, I wouldn't care if my personal information was encrypted with a very long key that nobody knew up in the cloud in India, because if anyone ever got that data, it's safe. But if they got my encryption keys, then it's, you know, it doesn't matter where it is, really. I'd much prefer it being on a hacker's computer with encryption over it than being in a secure data center without it. So, yeah, so talking to customers, but again, as you said, the great responsibility, you know, this is not something you want to play with unless you're a very sophisticated organization with mechanisms to manage that sort of responsibility. This isn't something you roll out to a 10-seat company and say, here's your encryption keys, don't lose them. Because we all know how often customers lose stuff and forget passwords, and you can essentially make their data unrecoverable. So have a real big think about how you would go about that. But I think as time goes on and people get more sophisticated, we'll find a way to solve these problems so that we can still have ownership of the keys, but Microsoft to store the data, but there's some mechanism to save us if we ever do lose those keys or something happens.
Yeah, so I think, again, it just shows Microsoft's commitment to obviously allowing customers to go that way if they want, and understands that some customers may want to bring their own key to encryption. And again, it is relatively straightforward for people to do. And again, it gives you that flexibility. So another benefit, I think, to looking at the Azure Office 365 environment over other competitors, especially for your data. Now, one of the other things that Microsoft has made generally available is just-in-time VM access. So again, what that means is that when you run up a virtual machine in Azure, typically it has the RDP port open so that you can do remote into that machine, and then you can do admin on it. And by default, that RDP port is typically available to any IP address. Now, obviously, what the bad guys can do is they can run around and try and use a grinding style repetitive script to try and get into the virtual machines. And again, typically, if you have a bad password, well, then they're probably going to get in and cause havoc. So to overcome this in a way, Microsoft is basically allowing users to say, right, I want access to this virtual machine on the RDP port, but only for a specific amount of time. So then they configure that. That's a just-in-time access. They then nominate for, say, 3 hours. I want to have, you know, 3-hour window for me to access this server. After that, the rules kick in, and again, that access is then denied. So yet another way that Microsoft is looking to secure the infrastructure that people create. And again, that service has now gone general availability. We've also now got the Azure AD expiry policy for Office 365 groups. So what that means is when you create a team or a Office 365 group, what we find in a lot of cases is after a while people abandon it, forget about it, don't change it. So again, we've now got the ability to go in there and remind the owner of the group or the admins of the group as to what they want to do. They can then elect to delete it, they can keep it, they can archive it, and so on. Now, the only downside, unfortunately, to this new expiry policy is it typically needs Azure AD Premium. Again, this is, I think, another push or another recognition that we need to be looking at Microsoft 365, which we will come to shortly. Now, the final thing that I'll finish on here in Azure is Microsoft has announced more data centers in Europe and the Middle East. So it's going to spin up some new data centers in the United Arab Emirates and also in Switzerland. So again, Microsoft just continues to roll out these data centers all around the world, obviously to cater to local markets and also to reduce the latency. So again, big commitment from there from Microsoft. And again, we look forward to seeing more data centers and more options with the Azure environment. So before we get into our Microsoft 365 stuff, any other news or comments you've got there, Brenton?
Well, we're at nearly 26 minutes now, so we probably should get on to the main topic.
Why don't we do exactly that? So let's talk about Microsoft 365. So in summary, Microsoft announced this product at their partner conference last year, so about June, July last year. And in essence, Microsoft 365 is a combination of three of Microsoft's existing products. So it is a combination of Office 365, Windows 10, and the EMS Enterprise Mobility Suite. Now, in essence, there are two SKUs, as there typically are. There is a Microsoft 365 Business and a Microsoft 365 Enterprise to allow you to make the choice between them. So have you had any experience or deployed any of this Microsoft 365 stuff yet?
No, I haven't deployed any. I went and did the 2-day training with Mark O'Shea, which was very eye-opening. Essentially, all the capability is all already in Office 365, but this puts it all together. It's incredibly powerful, but you know, it was a 2-day technical training, and I'm not really technical. I'm more of a business consultant than a technology consultant, so it was pretty full on. I had a pretty steep learning curve. So those who haven't started, and like, I'm born in the cloud, I live in Office 365 every day. I'm doing stuff for customers, I'm doing some technical stuff, but generally a lot of planning and strategy. I was blown away with how much in Office 365 I still wasn't aware of and I didn't know, and it's all being bundled in. So if you're just starting on your, oh, we should do our first migration into Exchange Online, You're not 2 or 3 years behind in real time, you're 10 years behind, because I was way ahead and I can't keep up. I started off as 365 before, you know, when it was still a Telstra exclusive nightmare syndicated tenant thing that everybody hated. So it's very, very difficult to keep on top of this stuff.
Yeah, so I think that one of the driving reasons for the Microsoft 365 solution is the focus on security for devices. So one of the common questions I ask people who attend the sessions that I present on this is typically is whether they can put their hand on their heart and confirm to me that every device they have brought into the room with them is fully encrypted at rest. And all of a sudden you can see them all getting a bit uneasy and shifting in their seat and looking from side to side, because they know that things like their phones, things like their tablets are probably not fully encrypted at rest. Now, again, that puts at risk the information on there, but now with things like the data breach legislation, GDPR coming, that could potentially put customer records at risk if that device is locked, and then that could result in a breach of the legislation, which could be very, very nasty. So I think that first and foremost, the most important thing about the Microsoft 365 is its ability to manage, control, and secure the devices which people are using, and also the information that lives on that devices. The key reason is that those devices typically aren't connected to a cord. They're not generally maintained, or someone's pushing out group policy or updating them themselves, you know, when they're brought in. And the final thing is they're not really used in a single place. They're used all over the place, in the back of the car, at home, at a soccer match. So these devices are basically the gateway to corporate data, and the vast majority of them probably don't have much protection on them. So, I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, look, I work with a whole bunch of clients. My favorite clients are professional services, and I ran into a lawyer who hadn't had an IT provider before and didn't really believe in it. So she had such and such lawyer at gmail.com, and I was going through the security implications of having that. So I could have a look on her computer and no antivirus, and I'm like, oh my God. And I said, well, here's what's going to cost you to fix it all and get it all up to spec, to a point where I could sleep at night. And I couldn't sleep at night with her current setup. And she said, oh no, I don't see any value in it, blah, blah, blah. Pretty much 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from one of my really good customers, again, a lawyer. They came to me right at the start when they were first setting up their business. We set them up with services, BitLocker encryption, Azure AD login. They got RMM running, etc., etc. Full Office 365. They sleep in the cloud, which has its own authentication as well. So they were sitting in the airport and they got the call to say their computer had been stolen. They rang me like 10 minutes before they got on the plane. They said, we need to make sure we make our information secure. We're worried about our customer files. I said, don't worry about it. They go, what do you mean? I said, well, first of all, they got to have your Office 365 password to log in. If they just had a local admin account, you can run a program called Conboot. I probably shouldn't tell people this because they might go around and start doing it, but you can essentially get around the Windows lock-in screen without too much trouble. It takes about 10 minutes of work. But if it's BitLocker,
yeah, the common thing here is they need physical access to the machine.
That's true, yeah. If you're looking at...
That's the main thing. So just keep in mind that yeah, if anybody gets physical access to your phone, your device or whatever, then they own it. It's as simple as that. But you're right. So sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so I'll keep going. So anyway, so I said, don't worry about it, but as a precaution, we're going to change your Office 365 password. So the next time it connects out to the internet, it's going to update that on your device. So we did that. I said, you know, you just never know. So we've got some weird password on it now, and they're happy with that. I set up with the RMM to send me an email next time it checks in, so I'll know next time it connects to the internet, and it's going to send me a text message as well. And I'm thinking, you know, for that customer, under the notifiable data breach legislation, they wouldn't have to disclose. I said, you still have to check if they took any paper files with them or anything like that. You'd have to disclose those situations. But as far as the legislation reads, I'd be very reasonably assured that that device is safe. Now, if they were just on-prem with a server connecting through the domain, I'd say, well, you know, the information's basically public. No BitLocker, you know, bypassing login screens, simple, you should report it because it's, you know, it's so easy to get past these things. 10-minute Google search and a memory stick and you're in. So this is the sort of insane security that you can offer your clients. This is a 3-seat company. This isn't a big company. They don't spend a lot of money with me, but they buy all the stuff I tell them to buy. And as a result, I'm able to, you know, I went off, got the serial number, sent it to the police forum, put it all in their file forum, and they're all overseas. So, you know, this is a story they're going to tell all their friends, and that's going to come back in a pretty big way. The next step, of course, once you've got all this is stuff before Microsoft 365. When you start getting in there and start managing their iPhone, you start managing some of the other things. That's where this Microsoft 365 is coming in. Isn't that right, Robert?
Yeah, I think so. So just before we go on, just do you want to tell people what an RMM tool is? Just
So remote monitoring management. A lot of people use Kaseya. I use Continuum. They're all pretty lousy, but they come with a whole bunch of features where you can script stuff. So I can send down webroot's not installed. I can send down and install it and send down kind of like having group policy that I can manage it through the cloud. You know, you can send down group policy instructions. You can install crypto prevent from the cloud if you want to. So that's what we primarily use it for. We use it for, you know, when the PETA thing came out and there was a vaccination for it, we pushed that out within 12 hours of it coming out. Continuum wrote the script for us and we just ran it on all our customers' PCs and told them that we're doing all this amazing stuff for them. And you know, patch management for Windows 7, all of that sort of stuff. You know, Windows 7 released an update that broke everyone's computer. Sent a customer email, said, oh, there's this thing that's breaking everybody's computer. Don't worry, we got it under control over here for you with our RMM software. So, and you can make great margin on it if you're running a business and you're trying to make some money, like all of us are, just trying to stay viable. It's a good product to have in your suite, particularly in a small business. And in the larger businesses, some of the Microsoft offerings can fill a lot of those gaps. But when you're trying to manage, say, 50 sites or 50 individual customers, it becomes extremely onerous trying to do that through all 50 Microsoft consoles. You need one console that does it all. So that's what we use it for.
So yeah, the RMM tool we've typically seen deployed for workstations. So again, Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 10 servers, those sort of things. Now, the lack of that, I suppose, that what it hasn't covered are the devices. So your things like your iOS, your Android, those sort of devices typically didn't have much control. So people would buy them, they would then configure their corporate email on them, and then they'd run around, and those devices are typically the ones that are most likely to be stolen or to be lost. And again, then all of a sudden they turn around and now you've got this new legislation that requires people to take action, as you note, and then they can't control them. So this is where Microsoft provides that ability once those devices are joined to Azure AD. And this is one of the key reasons of going Azure AD, is that your devices as well as your Windows 10 machines can be joined directly to Azure AD. So you don't need a domain controller, you don't need a computer on-prem that controls your login and your password. That's all done from the cloud thanks to Microsoft. And now the devices are under control. That means you can push out corporate policies. You can say, look, any device that we're looking after has to be encrypted. You can only save its information to OneDrive for Business. It can't save it on the device. We're not going to allow you to copy and paste from a corporate email into your Gmail account or into your Apple Notes or whatever. And again, it gives you, with the business, this control over the device to make sure that it's compliant. Now, the great thing is Microsoft's been doing this for a long time with a product called Intune. So Intune is typically the product from Microsoft that does that. That now integrates with Azure AD, allows you to push out all this functionality and control those devices pretty much down to just about any of the options that are available on the phone. And the other great thing is that you or employees can bring their own device, they bring their own iPhone, and then when they join that into the corporate environment, the software will protect, or the Intune will protect their corporate credentials are corporate data and not, basically make no change to their personal data. So if they leave the organization, the business can then take that corporate data back. They can remove access, remove control of it, and then the user's back with a normal standalone phone they had before they came to the business. So I think the big differentiation here, the big reason around Microsoft 365 Business is the ability to put the mobile devices under control and to do, as you mentioned, the remote management control and make sure those are secure, because again, those devices have a huge amount of important data. And again, people who think that email hasn't got important data, wow, just look at all the information that someone could glean if they did get access to that. So now, again, sorry, I think that's probably the big press.
Robert, yep. Around access to information, you might be sitting back there going, you know what, all my customers, they don't use any of this cloud stuff. It's not on their phones. We don't let it. We block it. We block them from being able to log in with their phones, et cetera, et cetera. In that response, I'd say, I bet if I picked up the CEO's phone, I'd find Dropbox free version. I'd find all sorts of shadow IT apps where you've stopped him from doing his work. So he's found a workaround because you're not his friends over in IT. You're the enemy because you're preventing him
the department from
doing his work, right? So the modern security approach now is go to your users and have a honest conversation around, hey, we don't mind if you use cloud apps, but the secure stuff, we need to manage that. So if you want to put secure personal identifiable information, etc., here are the apps we use. If you want to organize the social function with the friends at your work and whatever, we're happy if you use this. So I think you'll find, even though you don't think your customers have sensitive information on there, at any moment you'd pick up the CEO's phone, no PIN, no fingerprint, nothing, log in, emails on there, Dropbox is full of sensitive information. It's a field day, and phones are stolen constantly. So what are you doing?
Yeah, and I think the thing is too, you've got to look at, we've changed from a world where we protected the boundary, we protected the location, we protected the premises. Now we need to protect the individual, because the individual is the one running around out there, accessing their data on devices through remote consoles, pulling in SaaS-based applications, which again is not something the business normally controls. So again, that is a real challenge.
Yeah, I agree. But it's not a challenge that we can't manage now. Yes, it's hard to manage every SaaS app in the world, but you can manage all the credentials through Azure AD. Even the free, cheap, basic version gives you 10 apps or something. And then companies like Dropbox, I think the way Dropbox approaches converting free into business is remarkable. And I might even do a whole expose on it one day, because I've never seen anything so amazingly thought out and put together. And I was talking to someone in IT the other day. They got about 450 endpoints, and they just about bought it on the second beer. They said, yep, I want it. Buy it. How do we buy it? Can we buy it off you now? I'm like, hold on, there's a process first. But we'll make sure you can get it. So I might walk you through all of that. We'll do a deep dive on how you can secure some of these SaaS apps, and I'll use Dropbox as a case study.
Sounds good, yeah. And again, a lot of people don't appreciate that the base Office 365 comes with a number of Azure functions. So a single sign-on web portal, a cloud reset portal. Again, there's a lot of things in there. And then the next thing is to increase their functionality by adding Azure AD Premium. Now, in the Microsoft 365 world, if we go to the enterprise SKU, so the business SKUs are typically aimed at those smaller businesses who are cloud only with no local domain controller. So they're designed for you to connect directly to Azure AD and have no on-prem basically equipment. The difference is when we get to the enterprise plans is that we get more functionality. So we get the E3 Office 365 or the E5. We get Azure AD Premium, we get the full Intune, we get the rights management, which is Azure Information Protection. We also get the threat analytics and protection as well. So we had a whole lot of more features, and we also get the ability to integrate that with an on-prem environment. So again, it will work with our Azure AD Connect. But I think the big bonus is the Azure AD Premium. That gives you so many of these features that are now beginning to roll out that Microsoft is, you know, really adding to make, you know, life so much easier for you. So the example of these is the Office 365 group naming policy, the Azure AD password write-back, the enterprise state roaming with Windows 10, and a lot of the conditional access is also you need Azure AD Premium to do that. And that's exactly what you get with the Microsoft 365 enterprise environment, as well as the ability to control the devices. So again, we're stepping up the game, we're stepping up the security. That's why I think that, in fact, Microsoft 365 Enterprise E3 is probably the best value product out there when it comes to overall security for the whole environment, from devices to users to email to SharePoint to Teams to everything.
Yeah, and I think Mark put it quite well when I went and did the training, and he was basically saying, you know, you'll go in there, you'll config some stuff up in Microsoft for Business, and, you know, it'll be fine, and you'll be a day into it, and you'll be like, oh, I really need it to do all this other stuff, and it doesn't. So he reckons within within the weekend you're going to be going back selling E3 to the customer because you need all this extra stuff, because it doesn't. You know, the Microsoft Business is good, but it's really designed around that cloud only customer. Maybe they got a one line of business app, maybe they don't, but they're fully in the cloud, and you know they don't have the complex requirements of enterprise. As soon as you've got any sort of hybrid, anything like that, you've got to go to the E3, Microsoft 365 E3, which is different to Office 365 E3 and Windows 10 E3, which is different to... How many E3 things are there in...
Don't forget EMS E3.
Oh, EMS E3, yeah, that's it. I nearly forgot EMS E3. So, crazy name conventions aside.
Well, they are trying to align them. So basically, Microsoft 365 E3 is Windows 10 E3, Office 365 E3, EMS E3. So you can see them sort of beginning to standardize, hopefully, around this. But again, it can be confusing because now we've got, you know, and I think this is, again, the reality of today's market is there's so many options out there. You know, what does E3 include? You can buy them all standalone, but bundled together. Plan 1 gives you this. Plan 2 gives you this. And that's the biggest challenge, I think, in today's environment for people, customers, and also IT people to keep up with all these changes. Now, they are really, really powerful in what they can do. And again, there is something that really need to be investigated. But I think the big advantage is once you are on top of it, or once you've implemented it once, you can obviously script it and automate it. And the final benefit, I think, for resellers is to realize is that Microsoft pretty much gives you all of this as a partner for free. So there's no excuse for you not to start using these products and implementing them inside your own business.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And we spoke a little bit last week about data loss prevention, as that, you know, that comes with Office 365 E3. So, you know, which everybody gets with their action pack. There's really no reason why you shouldn't be in there and at least have it on notifications. So I had it on block, but it's running into problems. So I chucked it on notifications, but it's just interesting how well it works and how it works. And then when you're going and having a conversation about compliance with your customer and how users use technology and how they try and get around IT and all of this sort of stuff, then yeah, all of a sudden you can say, oh, look, what I'll do is I'll just put my credit card number in here, or my, don't actually, but get something that looks like a credit card number, send it off to the customer and say, oh, look, it's blocked. And you go, oh, how'd you do that? Who did that? It's like the machine did that. The machine learning knows what a credit card number is and has blocked me from essentially exposing your business to PCI insanity. So what you can show the customer now, and this is, you know, it's more show, don't tell. Don't sit there and tell the customer that, you know, they're a bad person unless they have this and your security's bad and spend money on this or you're a bad person. Go in and say, hey, imagine if I could do this for you. Oh, what do you mean? Let me show you. And the show versus tell is a much, much better way to go and have the conversation, I think. Because then they start to ask you, oh, can it do this? Oh, let's try it. Oh, wow, it blocked that. How did it do that? I'm like, I don't know. It's Office 365. It's magic. It's like a magic cloud. But anyway, we have a bit of a laugh with them. But it's very, very sophisticated technology. And to communicate, it's very difficult. But to show them, it's not that difficult.
Well, I think the big benefit Microsoft's getting is this aggregation. It can now look across, you know, so many mailboxes, so many authentications, so many, you know, users going about their daily job. And obviously that then brings with it a number of attacks as well. So Microsoft can then be aware of those. It can look at those. It can then solve those across its whole environment. So this is, I think, the big benefit of aggregating. So again, it's in a way, it's why we have a police force. It's why we have an army. We aggregate all this together, train them up, and they're the specialized people to handle this job. It's just too difficult to do individually, I think. So one of the big things is that the machine learning, as you mentioned, the ability for the machines to look at anomalies, because most of the security breaches we see today are typically only flagged when users do something that they don't normally do, so outside their normal behavior. So they logging in at 3 o'clock in the morning instead of 9 o'clock in the morning is something that should trip a flag. Now that's very difficult for a human being to do and monitor because the sheer volume of data and logs that are created, but a machine, very easy for it to find those sort of things and start notifying. So again, really, really want to highlight the enterprise versions of Office 365 and Microsoft 365. Microsoft even more so 365 because of its ability to manage and perform that security on the devices. And also don't forget that there's Azure in the mix here too that can really provide, you know, a single pane of glass across hosted infrastructure and also on-prem infrastructure as well, do log analytics, machine learning, all of that sort of stuff. Now, I think that total solution of Office 365 or Microsoft 365 and Azure combined is really going to be the most cost-effective and also the most secure going forward. And I think also for our resellers out there, it's also the greatest opportunity for you to go and configure that, look at automating it via scripting, and then roll that out to your customers as well. So I think there's lots and lots of benefits from these products coming from Microsoft. They're going to continue to improve, but I think you agree with me that the enterprise probably is the way to go for most businesses who aren't totally cloud-based these days.
Yeah, I think so. And even the ones that are, you know, I've got certainly customers that are. Again, you've really just got a business premium SKU, which is fine. It's secure, but you're missing a lot of the things. And I was thinking about asking you a question, Robert. So you've got the E3, Office 365 E3 is about $30. And Microsoft 365 Business is 25, 26, something like that, whatever it is. Now, if you're going into a customer today and they said, we've got a budget of $30 for Microsoft licensing, and they're not prepared to budge on that, would you be looking at selling them either the E3 SKU, or would you look at selling them the Microsoft 365 for Business?
Well, I think, again, the thing comes down to it. You've got to say, look, you know, if you want your devices protected, if you want data loss prevention, if you want all these features, again, it's not a cost argument at all. I just do not subscribe to the cost argument at all, right? It's a value statement, right? So if you want these functions, if you want unlimited mailboxes, unlimited OneDrive, you want data loss prevention, if you want the rights management, if you want all of that stuff on your devices and also on the mobile devices, then you really need to go Microsoft 365. If you don't, the ramifications are data breach and so on. So I think the way to reframe it is to look at the value. But at the end of the day, I'd be going with E3 above and beyond anything for the simple reason is the functionality and the security that comes with the base Office 365 is so superior when you look at things like data loss prevention, you know, and I would also look at adding on things like advanced threat protection to really protect those emails and eliminate the need for yet another security vendor. So again, I think that having the E3 of anything is going to be better, but I'd certainly be pushing very hard to move them to a Microsoft 365 environment because there is just so much more that can be done. And as you say, the idea is to show them what is possible and then Again, if that solves a business need, people will pay for it, you know, as long as it solves a business need. So I don't think price really is an argument once you can show the value of the solution.
Yeah, I suppose I wasn't really concentrating too much on price there, but sort of, you know, how as IT professionals, we're looking at all the different SKUs and we're looking at Microsoft 365 Business, we're looking at an Office 365 E3 offering, and we're going, okay, well, where does this play in our market segment? And that's a particularly difficult question to ask as more and more of these SKUs come about. So, you know, like I think, maybe if they had a lot of mobile devices or they want to manage their mobile devices, but, you know, they won't go to the Microsoft E3 for whatever reason, maybe they need the Office 365 Business, Microsoft 365 Business.
I think, again, it comes down to, the way I tell people is you sell from the top down, not the bottom up, right? So you go in and show all the features and show how they solve these things. And again, the reality is if they solve a problem, they are cheap. And that's why I'm happy to pay for things like advanced threat protection above and beyond what I might normally get, because it provides such a level of confidence that if I get attachments that are suspect, and it happened the other day, Microsoft will open the sandbox and then tell me, hey, you know, this had CryptoLocker in it, or this had this in, we've done this and we've dealt with it, or we're letting you know, or whatever way you want to configure it. How much time is that going to save me if it gets on and affects my machine, right? So I think, again, you've just got to equate it to the insurance thing. You know, they buy business insurance, they have fire insurance, they have crash, you know, damage for their cars. Again, this is cheap insurance for the amount of time that a business could be down if they're if they're attacked. And I think the reality is the attacks aren't, again, in any way, shape or form diminishing, they're increasing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So again, at the end of the day, you want the best protection you can. And when you look at the cost and the ability to go across all your devices on-prem, in your hand, with one login that can be all managed from a single console, I don't think there's much that can beat it.
No, I don't agree. I agree with that 100%. You know, if you've got to go out there and talk to the customers with stories, you've got to help them understand that, you know, CryptoLocker isn't something that is imaginary. I haven't had any customers with CryptoLocker, believe it or not. I've never had a customer ring me up with CryptoLocker. Now all these IT providers are all stressing out every day about CryptoLocker, and I stress out about it too, but, you know, I put in all the risk mitigation that I can, because again, you don't want to have that conversation with your customer. Some customers need a CryptoLocker to whack them back into line and go, hey, you know, all that stuff you were saying was true, I can't believe it, okay, well, let's do it now. But most customers, if you can educate them properly, and they're good customers that, you know, you people you want as customers, they should listen to you and they should take some of these stuff on board. But if you don't believe it, they're not going to take it on board.
I think the thing is, the way you do is you use it yourself, right?
Yep.
Partners have access to it. They
eat
need to
your
use
own
it.
Dog food.
The second. That's exactly right. And the other thing is, if you look at the, you actually look into it. So I've seen some examples of attacks. So let's take CryptoLocker for an example. Microsoft has a good graphic of an attack, right? So Microsoft was monitoring their mailboxes for a known CryptoLocker attack. And if you have a look at the graphs, the actual attachment which launched the CryptoLocker, basically it was morphing. So it was changing its signatures to avoid detection every 30 seconds. So every 30 seconds, there was a new and different attachment with a different signature to avoid signature-based, AV. So there's no way that traditional methods can cope or can hope to intercept these. The only way you can do it is with these modern technologies that typically use the cloud for behavioral analysis. And again, in a lot of cases, the only way you find CryptoLocker is to go and open it. And the best way to open it is in a sandbox on somebody else's environment, and that's exactly what Microsoft's doing with the advanced threat protection. So again, tie that down to $3 a month per user versus the amount of downtime they would have if they did get CryptoLocker. So to me, it's a no-brainer, and I think if people aren't prepared to listen to that and take the advice on as a trusted provider of, you know, technology guidance, then I would suggest you probably may not have the best customer there. So again, focus on the good ones, the ones who want to do the right thing, and I don't think you'll have any problems.
Yeah, I don't think you do. It's just a matter of finding out what's important to the customer. Sometimes, you know, for me, what I like to work with and where most of my customers are is they're very customer focused. I'm extremely customer focused. So culturally and values wise, we're very, very much aligned. So when I go and have a conversation about security, I don't talk about, I might mention that they'll be up with headaches and stuff, but that's not the main narrative of the story. It's the main narrative of the story is, how do we stop the bad guys from destroying the lives of your customers? That's the main narrative of the story. If you have customers that are particularly money focused, and you'll see more through different industries and what people are interested in, you can go in and make the financial argument. It's really about knowing your customers inside out. What are their triggers? Why do they buy stuff? And there's only usually a 3 or 4 different reasons customers buy stuff. And then aligning that conversation, so you're putting it in terms that they would use, the way they would tell their friends about it, not necessarily just what Microsoft tell you to say or what other people have said works. Once you know your customer and you understand the narrative and the point you're trying to get across and you can communicate in their language, you're home free. Most people will do the right thing. 90% of people do the right thing, in my opinion.
Yeah. So look, I think we've given people a lot of information. We've given them an introduction to the Microsoft 365. We've, again, recommended that they look at the enterprise over the business. We probably need to round off this episode as we are getting fairly long. I think we can break this up and we can go deeper into it. But again, if you do want to hear more about Microsoft 365, what it includes, what it covers, best place to do is to, again, you can hit us up on Twitter, so N2K Podcast, as well as on Facebook, which is also N2K Podcast. Send an email to feedback@needtoknow.cloud. You can contact me directly at DirectorCIA on the Twitter. And what about yourself, Brenton?
Same as. Jump on my website, brentonjohnson.com. Just Google or Bing me. I'll be on both. I should keep checking Bing every week to make sure I'm still on there. But yeah, this week I'd love to hear your feedback. This is my third week in. So if you have any ideas, questions, think I ramble too much, not enough, let me know, because feedback's the food of champions and I want to hear it.
Excellent. Well, I think that goes for everything to do about the podcast. If you want us to dive deep, please let us know. Please use those avenues to contact us. We'll get this episode up shortly and all the show notes will be there as well. Remember, we thank you very much for taking the time to listen to the Need to Know podcast, and we'll catch you again on the next episode.
See you later.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.